Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Gas, Glue, and Guardrails, the Culture, Leadership, and Career Show. I'm Pete Havel, your host, and I am also the president of Fireproof Leadership, my company that I founded to help fix broken workplace cultures and broken careers, but also help people in tough spots deal with some things in their lives when they get a raw deal, a challenge they're not prepared for, helping folks through those moments to make them smarter, make them react better. I'm also the author of a book called The Arsonist in the Office, a book about my wild ride through about the craziest workplace culture imaginable. But more importantly, I talk about what leaders and managers and employees in an organization can do to understand what the heck is going on and also react well to it and understand their culture and how, frankly, when it comes from that leadership standpoint, the impact leaders can have on making stuff better for everybody around them. I want to start off with this, and you'll hear this on every podcast. If you like the show, want more of it, and want to hear more about it and listen to the episodes, I want you to follow and subscribe. Go to iTunes or wherever you need to go for that, wherever you're listening now, and subscribe. Also, I want you to give it a 5-star rating. I'm making the ask, so if you like it, I hope you'll make that 5-star rating on iTunes. So let's start off. In today's episode, we're going to be talking with somebody with guts, somebody who has done some amazing things in his career and his life, and he's got a heck of a second act coming. We're going to introduce him in just a minute. Somebody that was riding high in a position that a lot of people would envy, want to get to, and one day, all that changed. I've been there. Some of y'all in this audience I know have been at that point as well. But I've found in life and in my life and hearing from so many people, it's not always about how far you rise, but sometimes when you fall, how much you can bounce back from it, and then also what you can learn from that experience and how you can help other people in it. So I'm going to let him jump in just a minute, but I want to introduce Pancho Navarez. He is we're going to call him Pancho on here, but he is officially, and I guess right up until they put the obituary in the newspaper, he will be listed as the Honorable Pancho Navarez. He is a former state representative from Eagle Pass, Texas. He is an attorney, proud Longhorn, and also he is a graduate of St. Mary's University Law School. Got a beautiful family, and he served 4 terms in the Texas House. He chaired, and that is a pretty competitive job. I will tell you that when you become a chairman. Chaired the House Border Security and Public Safety Committee. And Pancho, thanks for being on today.
Thanks for having me, Pete. I'm glad I'm on the pilot.
Let's do it. That's right. All right. Man, I'm going to cut to the chase. I always send the guest show the questions I'm going to ask, so I don't want to surprise anybody. That's about the last thing I want going on or ever happening to me. But what we're going to do is start off at a pivotal point, then dial back about how you got there, and then talk about the stuff that has transformed from where you were to where you are.
Sure.
And if that makes any sense at all, we'll go with that. And if not, just ride with me and we'll get this moving. September 6th of 2019 was a pretty tough day.
The day itself wasn't. It became one.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is on September 6th of 2019, I flew to Austin in my airplane and I flew into the state FBO, which is the private little landing area for state officials. And I'd done this many times before where I'd flown in there, in and out of there. But what was different about this trip is that I had an envelope with my name on it where I had between 2 and 3 grams of cocaine in it. And why I came to have that with me, we'll talk about that some, but that's what happened. And that envelope fell out of my pocket. And later on that day, I realized I'd lost the envelope and I didn't make a big deal about it. I thought maybe I left it on the plane or I left it at home. And I really didn't give much thought after that. But about a month later, I get a call from the director of the Texas Department of Public Safety to tell me that envelope had been found there and there was an investigation. And so initially, I didn't really tell him much. I just said, okay, whatever. And he asked me if I would speak to an investigator about it. I said I would. And to give you some context and talking about the why now is by this time I'd become a full-blown alcoholic and a full-blown addict for a lot of different reasons. But for a simple reason is that's what I was destined to become because I was making bad choices about how I was dealing with my own life and my own successes and failures and everything in between, right? And I say that destined because we can all change our stars, but you can only change your stars if you're willing to be honest with yourself. And if you're willing to actually make some tough decisions about yourself. And up to that point, I hadn't been able to do that. I'd been in a lot of tough scrapes, and I've had a lot of highs and I had a lot of lows, and I didn't really deal very well with either one of those things. For me personally, it was just as bad to have something awful happen to me as it was something good. But Corey and me didn't seem to mix very well. So
when that's a tough environment, just in general, what you're in, right?
The legislature occasions that, right? There's a lot of highs and a lot of lows. And you have to, the people that I see that are well-adjusted and the colleagues that I thought were sane, if you will, well-adjusted.
Relative term.
And sane and healthy people, they're not overwhelmed by either the depths that they can fall to, or they're overwhelmed by euphoria when things go real well. And I had a hard time living in that quiet spot of my life. I just did. And so when they told me about this investigation and that I was going to talk to an investigator, I probably had some outs, right? Your addict, alcoholic mind starts thinking of, how do I get the cheese and get out of the trap, right? And of course, I went through that exercise, and then I realized I was just tired of being tired. And if that survival instinct that addicts and alcoholics tend to ignore, and it's bewildering, right, for somebody that doesn't have the disease to see how an addict and alcoholic will abandon that survival instinct that we all have. I think it's just divine providence that it sparked that. I just made that conscious choice and unconscious choice that I wanted to live. And the way I was going to live was that I was going to tell the truth about the envelope, tell the truth about what I had been struggling with. Because I've always been compartmentalizing my honesty. I've always been very honest how I was living my life, but for this, and how I would deal with people. So I think a lot of people were surprised, but that's the way addicts and alcoholics operate, right?
Yep.
And so, go ahead, man. I'm sorry.
Did you, I know, especially in the world of politics, you've got folks that are well-meaning, but you've got folks that are well-meaning for what they think your plan ought to be. I know anytime there's a lot of folks have those circles. Were you getting those folks that were amped up about that had already projected you as congressman or senator or something like that in the future of saying, here's how we work through it. Here's the angle. Here's how you pivot.
Yeah, there was no shortage. And I mean, it's not, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't looking at those things myself, because I've always been the go big or go home kind of deal.
Absolutely. And
swing from the heels, whatever analogy you want to use, that was me my whole life. And so there's no shortage of that, where people see some potential in you, and they let a lot of things slide because of that potential. And it's pretty dangerous for a guy like me, or anybody like me. And I think that you couple those things with how useful you can be in the chamber, whether it's to your constituents, whether it's to a certain interest, right, needs you, whether it's to your fellow colleagues that also need you, because those are the constituency, right? Especially in the House, there's three constituencies. It's the people that sent you there, the interest groups, right, that have different things and different needs that they advocate for. And then, of course, your colleagues, those are your constituencies. And being able to navigate that it's difficult. It's not easy, even for the most well-adjusted and well-meaning and well-intentioned legislator. It's hard. And I really struggled with that. I struggled with how to spin all those plates. I struggled with being in the minority, because some things that I thought should be no-brainers that should happen, they wouldn't happen because it would get caught up in this morass of partisan politics.
Absolutely.
And there, it seems there might be a little bit less of that in the Texas House. Just because of the way we're set up. And we actually probably agreed on about 85% of things. But those 15%, it was very hard. It was very bitter. And some of the acrimony never leaves. And
it connects to every other bill that's going through the process.
Yeah, and you know what? But all those things, like, I can't. At the time, it was really easy for me to blame other people for me feeling that way. But the truth is, I felt that way because I felt that way. Like, I can't. It took me a while to understand that. And I'm a 50 years old, and it took me a long time, almost all of my 50 years, to figure out that I can't control every little thing, right? It's beyond me. And I mean, for somebody that's a perfectionist, that lacks humility and has a huge ego and wants things to be a certain way, that's really hard. Those are my defects.
I resemble that remark. let's talk a little bit about, so you've talked with the Department of Public Safety and everybody involved on the legal side, and you get to a point where you're going through, you agree on what's called pretrial diversion, right?
Yeah. So one of the things that that immediately happened is I had a really tough month between hearing this and, or really a couple, 2 weeks that I was still battling the disease and whether I was going to get clean and sober and not wanting to, and then wanting to, and then making the decision that I wanted to, and then saying, look, I'm just going to come clean because I need to see my way out. Like, however this is going to go, this is it. And it worked. I just, those instincts that I had to survive, they weren't wrong. They were telling me what I should have known and should have done a long time before that. The help was always there. I just didn't want it and I didn't want to do it. And this incident, if you will, when it became public, it felt like some disaster because it did. But in hindsight and looking back, and I'm grateful every day that I have the benefit of hindsight because I'm alive. I'm alive to appreciate it.
Amen.
it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me.
Yep.
It woke me up in ways that I don't know if I ever would have woken up from. And I realize now that for a good portion of that part of my life, I was sleepwalking through it emotionally, right? Yep. I was absent for a lot of things physically and emotionally, and I'm not anymore. Like today, I'm here, right? I'm here for all of it, like the good stuff and the bad stuff, all of it.
Yeah. So one of the things I learned, and I think you learned, I want to bring it up now, is in politics, you find this, I think, just about 10 seconds after you're out the door that you can no longer support a bill or show up at something, stroke somebody's ego or something like that. You can no longer do certain things. And at that moment, you find out who your friend, you start to find out who your friends are.
Yeah. And you always hear that, like when tough times come, you find out who your friends are, but you don't understand it until you live through it.
Yeah.
And I wasn't surprised by a lot of the people that supported me because they just did. I just knew they would.
Yep.
And I really understand in a way, and I forgive people that would walk away from me because the truth is that's what you're supposed to do. A lot of these people had enabled me for a long time. And I really feel like that actually helped me too. It helped me see, you know what, these are the things that matter, right? These are the people that matter. Yeah. And they unwittingly, they do you a favor. And I mean that in a good way. And I don't mean that in this Eddie Haskell backhanded compliment. For those of us,
you just aged yourself there.
Yeah, for those of us old enough to watch Leave It to Beaver on WTBS, right? But I don't mean it that way. I mean it in a good way because people have their reasons for doing what they do, right? And I can't second guess that. But I'm grateful for the people that stuck around, and I'm also grateful for the people that didn't for their own reason.
What's one thing that I remember from that period, and I was reading about it in prep for our call today, is there was a moment when some of your adversaries in the House were saying, go after this guy, strip him of his committee chairmanship and those kind of things. And tell me about Dennis Bonin, the former speaker. And here's one of those examples. Find out who your friends are and the folks that can care about you in a way other than, man, I need your help in the next election, showing up in my district, those kind of things. Tell me about what that meant to you. And I'll have you describe it, and we haven't talked about this, but I'm guessing it was pretty cool when you have a friend who not only will tell you privately, but drives a stake in the ground and says, this is where I'm drawing the line in the sand. This guy's a friend of ours and we need to do the right thing by him. Talk about that.
You just made a very good point and knowing Dennis the way I know him, and it's going to sound funny, but he didn't surprise me. He basically called me and said, obviously privately, giving me encouragement and support, and then publicly and basically telling him to stay in the saddle, right?
Yeah.
For lack of a better word. And then telling everybody else publicly that this guy's going to stay in the saddle. And I think that had among them friends literally privately called out for support and then publicly went in another direction.
Wow.
Yep. And even that, I get it. This self-preservation that people have with their political careers or their professional careers. But I think that, and again, everybody does what they do and I'm not criticizing them, but I think it speaks a lot about one might think about Dennis. Dennis is a really good guy.
Yeah. Not the most touchy-feely dude, but he cares.
I'll never forget that. Shit, if Dennis was in a fight right now in an alley, I'd try to parachute in there and help the guy because that's what I would do. Because he basically did that for me, and he didn't have to.
Yeah,
And nobody asked him to do it, and he didn't have to do it, and he did it. And you go through a lot of stuff, and I almost hated to put him in that spot. Not almost. I hated to put him in that spot because you put people in different spots, but I think he brushed that aside both privately and publicly to help me because I needed help.
And I think in life,
I didn't, And honestly, Pete, I didn't really give a shit about it. I really was focused on trying to live, like literally I want to live. Yeah. But I think Dennis realized how important it was for a lot of different reasons for me to hang on. And I didn't realize at the time, but I needed that. I really did.
Yeah. You don't kick a person when he's down. And also if you can do something to help him and
sure you give somebody help. Sure you do, Pete. In politics, that's the best time to kick somebody when they're down, because they're down.
This may explain why I'm out of it now. I hadn't picked up that concept. So right after that, as you were saying, you were going through a lot politically, certainly personally, and that was the moment where, or one of, around that time was a moment when, and I was reading this in the article, an interview you did with the Houston Chronicle, where you're with your son. He can read you like a book. I know my daughter is that same way. He knows something's going on and something hits you. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So the morning that we were going to fly with my lawyers, me, my lawyer, and my wife, I'd already talked to my wife about this, and my lawyer and I were going to meet with the investigator and with the assistant district attorney for Travis County. That morning, midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning was the last time that I used and drank. And I didn't know that was going to be the last time that I used and drank, but it turned out to be my sobriety birthday. Take him to school and we're going to go to the airport and get on the plane and fly to Austin. And of course, all this stuff's going through my mind and he can see it and he can feel it. And so as I'm dropping him off, he takes these little bag of Welch's fruit snacks, right? And he hands them to me and says, "Poppy, you look sad." He's like, "Why don't you have these? Because they're really good and they make me happy." And I should have brought the bag with me so I could show it to you. I still have it, right? It became a little talisman for me. And it really broke me in a lot of different ways. But looking back, it really became the catalyst among many things. But that one of, I want to do this, not that I need to do it. Like everybody needs help or needs to get better at something. But when you really get better, it's not because you need to, it's because you want to. And I finally cracked, like that part of me cracked. And it's allowed for every day since then to work for me. And whether it's a successful day or an unsuccessful one, depending on what measuring sticks, nothing changes. That crack, I've allowed it to widen and widen to let more stuff in. And I realized and I've learned like that, allowing myself to be vulnerable and allowing my son to reach that part of me and that moment was incredible. And the rest of it starts to pour in. And my wife and my daughters as well, they've been a big part of that. My friends, the rest of my family. Shit, people that I don't really even know that pull for me. I belong to this really wonderful fraternity of other addicts and alcoholics that are in recovery anonymously for the most part. It's an incredible... There's so much fellowship. And I tell people, find more honesty and decency and integrity in a meeting of drunks and addicts on any given day than I may in a church on Sunday, because nobody's hiding anything.
Yeah. You're wearing your life on your sleeve now.
Yeah.
Yep. And you got your family as your backup and the only folks you have to, I was going to say, impress that you have to worry about in terms of their approval rating of you.
You know, and even then, I've changed my barometer of that, too. And I tell them, "Look, guys, I got my life to live and you got yours. And I'm here to help and I'm here to sound off of. But in the end, the choices you make," we talk very frankly about everything because there's no secrets. And I tell them, "Look, secrets are deadly. In particular for me, they're deadly. And I don't want to have any." And I tell them, "Look, you don't have to look very far to see how bad things can get if you don't take care of yourself." And I make sure I take care of myself first today so that I can be of service to them, to anybody else, to you, Pete, if you need it, or anybody else. It's got to work that way. You get on a plane and they tell you, "Hey, put your mask on first before you put somebody else's on, because you can't breathe. How are you going to help somebody else?"
So let's say we could go in the way back machine and you and I were sitting here and we were advising the 2000 and something version of you. What was it, 2012, entering office? What would you say to that guy in terms of the pressures, the things you've learned since that point of entering office to now, or that new rep, that new politician that's coming in that's trying to balance the pressures of life with being a good person at home and all those different things? What would you say to that guy?
Run. No, just kidding. Yeah. No, you know what I'd say is, don't have any expectations. Quit, leave all that stuff behind. Like, you know, my whole life, I always have these expectations, starting with myself and how things should be. And when you do that, more often than not, you're disappointed. And I don't, now I look at, I would tell that guy, leave all that shit behind, all these expectations you have, as best you can. It's almost impossible to get rid of all of them, but as best you can, leave them behind. And don't underestimate how losing is going to affect you, because you lose more often than you win when you're a member of a body that big. You just do. And for somebody like me, it's hard. When you start looking at the scoreboard, the way I was living my life, and you know what? I'm not putting enough points up. My average a game is this, and I'm not hitting it. And you can't look at it that way. Look, and Pete, because you were around it, is you start off with all these well-intentioned ideas, and by the end of the session, they're in a pile under your desk, crumpled up, and it's done. And I would tell that person, or anybody starting some position where there's a lot of eyes on you and you're potentially going to have a lot of stroke in certain situations, is prepare yourself to lose in a good way. Yeah. Because it will allow you to learn something from that. And I didn't, what I learned from losing early on is try harder, which
that's all you can do.
It is. But the truth is, you, when you got into a headwind, like, you know, maybe you should stop moving until the wind dies down. Give yourself a break.
That's the wisdom right there. Yep.
You know, and I spent my whole life battling, because that's what you're supposed to do, right? Double up your fist and bang and go. And it worked. But I really believe that it was working because I had some superpower. But the truth is, I didn't have a superpower. That's just the way things were going to be. And I happened to be in the right place at the right time. And I had some work ethic and I had some smarts and I could put a couple of sentences together. But it was never about me. It was a confluence of different things that were coming together that were favorable, just like when it's unfavorable, right? It just happens. That's what time does. And I would tell that idealistic 38-year-old or 39, however old I was then, I would tell him, just take it easy, man. You're going to lose and you need to learn something from losing past going harder at this, because maybe that's not the best thing to do.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
And so that's the big thing.
So I know you're a busy man. I've got a couple of questions I want to wrap up with. You already answered my final one, which we already covered. So let me ask you a couple other things. First, you stepped out a little bit. I live in Dallas. You're in South Texas, so I had not heard a lot about your journey in recent years, but you did a couple interviews. And again, thanks for coming on my show today to talk. But I'm guessing you heard from some people after that. Tell me about, basically, and I'm going to ask you another question kind of on top of this, but what are you hearing from? Have you heard from some folks that have been in your shoes or were just glad you stepped out? Tell me a little bit about what that feedback has been like.
I agreed to do the piece because if one person read it and said, you know what, I'm tired of the way I'm living, I want a better way to do it, then it's worth it. And I've had people reach out to me and say, how did you do it? How are you doing it today? And so I talk to them and try to guide them as best I can by sharing my own experience. And if there's something about what I tell you that you identify with, and if you really want to open up your eyes and your ears and your heart, when somebody's sharing about themselves, almost 99.99% of the time, you'll be able to identify it. And that's happened since the article has come out in both the Express and the Chronicle. And so to me, it's a success.
Yeah, because absolutely.
Because if I can lead somebody to where I'm at right now, I mean, that helps me tremendously, because I get to share and then I get to see somebody else start picking themselves up and then doing the same thing, because that's the way it works, right?
Man, paying forward that purpose in life is huge. Absolutely huge. I will tell you from my own experience, the most challenging emails I get from people just pouring out whatever's going on in their lives usually have a timestamp of somewhere between 2 and 3 a.m. where I know this person is just sitting there, they're needing something, and they come across, of all people, me, to say, hey, you're a complete stranger. I'm going to give it a shot. I read your book. You gave me some, what would you do? And boy, that feels good.
And in parallel to your experience and some of the things that you're trying to, for lack of a better word, coach people on, is when you look at people that are in positions of leadership, undoubtedly the best experiences that I've had in dealing with people in power or in leadership is when they're willing to do the hard things, whether it's tell the truth or make a really tough decision and being honest with themselves and with their team, right? There's so much confidence and respect that's generated amongst individuals when we see that, right? When I see it, it inspires me. When I see somebody like that, and I didn't have very far to go. I could see my parents. They've always been very good examples of that. And I didn't want to pay attention to that. Those are the things that inspire me. Those are the people that, and it doesn't matter. They may not even believe they're leaders or even understand the context in which they're doing something or living it. But when I see that, those are the people I want to be behind. And I suspect that in the workplace and in corporate America, those are the people that really inspire success among the people that follow them.
Absolutely. If you know if you can trust somebody, if there's trust, a lot of good stuff can happen.
It is the transparency that you can have with the people that you're entrusted to lead.
Yeah.
Whatever the circumstances are, that goes a long way to creating success, and not just in the business, but creating successful people. And I think that might be your brand, right, Pete? Is trying to make people successful at being people.
And I think I'm hiring your newly started marketing firm now.
I think if somebody asked me, well, what are you doing? Just trying to be a successful person, whether it's doing my lawyer stuff or making my music and making another album or playing a show or going to softball practice or football practice or basketball practice or hanging out with my wife and taking walks and pretending to care about some novela that she's watching, which I really don't care. It's a success.
I know that pain. We've got the Hallmark Channel and see whatever that is, all those shows going on 24/7.
I say I'm transparent. I tell the truth. That's the only time I fudge is when I say, yes, I really enjoyed that movie or whatever we saw. I really did.
You might have been too transparent on that answer. You're going to get in trouble after that. All right. So One other thing I want to talk about, and you talked a little bit about, because my wrap-up question you covered, but I want to focus even a little bit more, zero in on it a little bit more. You've been given a second act, had that pivot. What do you want? Is there something you know you want to do with essentially this gift that you wouldn't have ever asked for in a million years, that day that was hell that turned into probably the day that changed your life for the better in a weird way? What do you want to do with this?
Yeah, and I can undoubtedly say that was one of the best days of my life. I didn't understand that then. And 3 years and three months and 24 days ago, I wouldn't have believed that. But I believe it now with all my heart, because this second act that you're talking about, it allowing me to say no to all these things, whether it's being in public office or running again, allows me to say yes to so many things in my life. It allows me to say yes to peace. Not to say that I couldn't. There's a lot of people that are in elected office that have peace, but it's just hard. It's really hard to have it because you're caught from so many spots. But I think that this peace that I want today, that I'm working on today, or that I had yesterday, and God willing, I get tomorrow, it allows me to do a lot of stuff. It allows me to be more successful in my law practice. I opened up another office in Houston. I've got an office in Houston. I have one in San Miguel de Allende. I've got one in Piedras Negras right here across the river, and I'm sitting in my office in Eagle Pass right now. It allows me to play my music every day. There's not a day that goes by that I don't work on music stuff. And I love doing that. It allows me to be around for the things that my children are doing that they enjoy and that they want to share with me. And I'm here both physically and mentally. Like, I'm all here. When I was in the legislature, I'd be home, but my mind was there. That stuff is all consuming, right?
140 days of hell.
And it's 140 days of hell when you're there. And then when you're in the other part of the other 18 months, all you're doing is working on that too. You can't get off the wheel. And you throw on top of that someone that's living with the disease that I was living with, it makes it very difficult. And this second act that I've been given, that I'm grateful for every day, it allows me to live this life. And this is the life that I choose today. And it's happy, it's productive, it's disappointing sometimes, but it's supposed to be all those things. And I'm okay with that. Before, I couldn't handle those swings. And now, I'll give you an example. Last August, I had a trial in federal court in Austin, and we hit a $4 million verdict in the deal. And I was driving home when I heard, because I had to come back to prepare for another trial. And when I heard the news of the verdict, I felt euphoric. I hadn't felt like that in a while, but I felt euphoric. And that's dangerous for me.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, it just coincided and things worked for a reason. There was an AA meeting going to start in about 45 minutes. So instead of driving to my ranch, I turned around and I went to my AA meeting, and I wanted to talk about my euphoria, how it made me feel and how it made me feel before. And it would have never occurred to me to ask for help in being too happy. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And,
hey, settle down, Tiger. There's going to be more days like this, or maybe there won't be. But
something's around the corner that's going to go
on. Yeah. So this is what the second act gives me, Pete. And I think you can understand this, and what you're trying to do with your show and with your books and how you talk to these people is that all these things, good or bad, you're going to be okay. And it's easy to say that, but you really will be. Like, this too shall pass. The good and the bad, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
And that's it for me, right?
It makes you better, stronger, and loving life more. And
I would have never imagined, Pete, and I was going to say, I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I'm not. I would have never imagined that being vulnerable and opening myself up would allow me to feel stronger. It's counterintuitive, yep. But it works.
Absolutely. Poncho, I want to thank you for coming on. I want to thank you for the courage, and get done with the thanking part. But just personally, man, it's amazing the courage you've shown. And I know it's just part of you cleaning your life up and getting stuff straight. But I can't imagine what is planned for your future with the folks you're reaching now and are going to be able to impact with your story. You're helping your wonderful family and just enjoying life and finding out what life's all about. Great stuff.
Thank you, Pete. I'll just say this is to anyone that hears this, when they hear it, and I know a lot of people will hear it, I'm not hard to find. If you want to talk about something or you have some questions, you can find me and I'm there. All right.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being on the Gas, Glue, and Guardrails podcast. Again, give us a 5-star rating. If you would, check us out and subscribe on iTunes. I'm getting this sales pitch down now, Poncho.
But
appreciate you guys checking us out. And Poncho, again, thanks so much for being on. And folks, go put out some fires. Thanks.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you.